When John Chris died in 2015, he bequeathed $5.7 million to his hometown, Sac City. But there's a catch. All of the money must be spent on the beautification of the town. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore the legacy of John Chris and the future of Sac City. I'll talk with three of the trustees of his estate. And most of us probably won't be leaving that large a sum behind when we go, but big or small, estate planning is important. I'll talk with economist Neil Harrell and estate planner Gordon Fisher about the do's and don'ts of planning your estate. We'd also love to hear your questions. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll talk about the power and importance of estate planning, something many Iowans and Americans never take the time to do. But we're going to start with the story of a man who left a large and surprising legacy to his hometown, Sac City in western Iowa. John Chris was a successful local businessman. He'd lived in Sac City his entire life, but everyone was surprised to learn that he left the community $5.7 million, and he stipulated that that money could only be spent for the beautification of the town. And with me now are three of the trustees of John Chris's estate. Dwayne Dewey Reese is here. He was a close friend of John Chris. Hello, Dewey.
Hi, Emily.
Thank you so much for being here. Renee Jacobson is also here with us, Assistant Vice President of Operations at Iowa State Bank, and she was also an associate. She worked with Mr. Chris for many years. Hello, Renee.
Hello.
And Scott Bunt is here. He's mayor of Sac City. Mayor Bunt, thank you for being here.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. And Renee, I want to start with you. I know that you you worked with John Chris for many years. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with him and the work that he did in the community.
I started working for John in 1993 as his bookkeeper at the clothing store, the men's clothing store, Cheap Clothing. And after he sold the store, I just continued to help him out weekly with paying bills and filing. He had macular degeneration, so his eyesight was a little impaired, but I would just help him over the years and we just got close over the years, just worked for him for 22 years.
Well, and Dewey, I know that you spent a lot of time with John Chris as well. You were friends. You also helped him out, as Renee was saying, he had macular degeneration, so he did need some help in later years. Tell me about your relationship with him. Dewey, can you hear me okay?
I can, and I'm talking to Charity.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I first knew John when I patronized his store. We moved to town in 1966, and like everyone else, we knew John best from Chief Clothing Store. Then later years, then after he retired and I retired, then we went to the local coffee shop and interacted there, and we, at local coffee shops, you try to solve the world's business and so forth. So then down the road, when he'd had some surgery, and I went to visit him in the hospital, he asked me in his professional way if he could commission me to help him. He would need a little help when he came home from the hospital. So he was telling me he wanted to hire me, and that's when I went to work for John, and I then worked for him for about 8 years.
You knew, everybody in town knew that he was a successful businessman, that he was pretty well off, but Dewey, how surprised were you when you came to understand the size of this estate, the size of the gift that he left to the community?
everyone, his closest friends. His family was Denver. He had a brother in Denver. So all of his closest friends, the country club where he golfed, and everyone, there was a Monday night get-together of the gentlemen's club, as they called it, for a few cocktails and hors d'oeuvres. Everyone, there was no one that, like you say, everyone knew he was probably pretty well-to-do, but it was a real surprise to everyone.
Well, and Renee, give me a little bit of the history of John Criss's family in this community, because as I mentioned, he spent his entire life in Sac City, but his family has played an important role in Sac City since it was founded, right?
Yes. His great-grandfather, Judge Eugene Criss, is the founder of Sac City. He moved here in 1855. And started up a sawmill, a flour mill. He was the postmaster, had a general store. He was just a very influential man for the city at that time. And I think in the later years, he took a big interest in his great-grandfather, in his history, and just wanted to give back to the community because of that.
Well, and before he passed away, he actually built a gazebo, helped to get a gazebo established in his great-grandfather's honor?
Yes, he put up a beautiful gazebo in 2013 along the bank of the Raccoon River, just on the east side of Sac City, and that was in memory of his great-grandfather.
Nice. And tell me a little bit about the gazebo, because we're going to get to the part where he said that this money has to be used for the beautification of the community. But this gazebo sounds really special. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Oh, it is a beautiful gazebo. He picked out the biggest one for, I think, in the state of Iowa. It's just for travelers. He wanted travelers to stop and families to enjoy it. It's just a beautiful location. We're going to start doing some more landscaping there with it, with some of the money, and that was something he always wanted to do and just didn't get it done.
Nice. And do I remember correctly that there's an opportunity to have a skating rink around it in the winter?
No, not there.
Not there, okay.
Another park we're focusing on.
All right. So more plans for the future. I put them together in my mind. But when you found out about this gift and the stipulation that it would be for the beautification of Sac City, what was your reaction, Renee?
Surprise. He never discussed it with me. I wish I could talk to him right now to find out if he had any ideas with what to do with the money.
I bet he did, right?
but yeah, it was a surprise.
Why do you think he made sure that the money could only be spent on beautification projects?
Just beautification. He didn't want it for infrastructure. I think he wanted it for, like it says, beautification for everyone to enjoy. It has to be city property, and it's just for the public to enjoy.
Well, and Mayor Bundt, I mean, you weren't mayor when John Criss passed away, but now the sitting mayor is always supposed to be part of this board of trustees to make plans for what to do with this gift. What was your reaction when you learned about it?
Oh, mine was the same as everybody else's. I mean, it was just a kind of a shock and a surprise of what he's done for the city, you know, or for what we can do for the city with that money.
When, you know, as mayor, you have to, of course, think about a lot of things. Sac City is a small town, and I'm sure there are many needs there. But in just focusing on beautification projects, how does that change your thinking? What is the challenge there for you?
Well, the challenge to me and for us is what exactly can we do to fall within the guidelines of, you know, what his request was. I mean, we got to strictly stay on, you know, city property. And then he wanted to help the general public. So what we're trying to do and think about is what would be the best for the most people when you do things. You know, the most people benefit from what we try to do.
What are some of the ideas that you guys are working on right now? If you can share some of those ideas. Maybe Dewey, is there an idea you're excited about?
Well, we're excited about so many things. And we do have in mind a new shelter house that will be usable year-round, heating and air conditioning. And we would like, many of the towns have made their downtowns so beautiful. And we do have that vision in mind. And we're working toward that end, but we don't really have enough plans in place to really talk about it. But that was Renee's brainchild, that downtown would be just, you come over the hill and you look at downtown and wow. So that's one of the things that we're doing.
I mean, like so many small towns in Iowa, Sac City has had its challenges. I mean, Renee, what do you think this could do for Sac City?
Well, hopefully just to improve the overall appearance and welcome new people to town, maybe draw in some new business and new people just moving to town. We have a lot to offer in Sac City. We have a great hospital. We have a rec center, the golf course, middle school and elementary. We also have an aquatic center, and with that area, we're going to focus on the aquatic center, the tennis courts, the basketball courts there, put up the new shelter house. We just have a lot to work with, and I think we can really improve the appearance of Sac City.
Now, John Chris was a private man, as we've talked about, and he didn't want a lot of attention.
No.
What do you feel his legacy should be for Sac City? What should people know about him? Renee?
John was a generous man, but he never wanted to be... He was humble. He would give to things but didn't want the notoriety for it. I just think he wants to carry on what his great-grandfather started.
In a situation like this, it would be really tempting to put his name on a lot of things, I would think. Have you guys talked about that since he wasn't a man who wanted a lot of attention?
Yes, we have. We have discussed it, and I think we've figured out a kind of a subtle way to incorporate the Chris name into certain designs.
So it'll be there, but not in a way he wouldn't have liked.
Right. And hopefully in some places we'll be able to put plaques with a little bit of the history, more about his great-grandfather than him.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Sure.
Renee Jacobson is Assistant Vice President of Operations at Iowa State Bank. Dewey Reese, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Dewey Reese, a close friend of John Chris, and Mayor Scott Bunt of Sac City. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
All three are trustees of the John Chris estate. $5.7 million left to Sac City for beautification of the town. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been talking about the legacy of John Chris, a man who left $5.7 million for the beautification of the small town he spent his entire life in, Sac City. Now, of course, he made a plan for what would happen after he passed. A lot of Americans don't have a plan. According to a 2016 poll, more than half of Americans don't even have a will. And even if they do, a lot of those wills are out of date. We're going to talk now about the importance and the power of planning your estate. You are welcome to join the conversation with your stories, examples of things that have worked in your family, things that didn't go right, or your questions as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Gordon Fisher, estate planning lawyer and of Gordon Fisher Law Firm. Hello, Gordon.
Well, good morning, Charity. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Also with us, Neil Harl, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State University and former Director of the Center for International Agricultural Finance. Neil Harl, thank you for being here.
I'm very pleased to be with you.
And I want to start with you with a personal story, a story from your past, something that you remember from when you were 16 years old, but the implications of it lasted a lifetime, really. Tell me what happened.
Well, actually, that probably was responsible for my career path. I grew up in Appanoose County near Seymour, and that's almost to Missouri. In my era, when I was born in 1933, there was not a lot of wealth around, and there was a lot of discussion about various things, but there was also difficult times. I was born in 1933, and that was just about the depths of the Great Depression. What really sparked my interest was after the death of my grandfather in June of 1950, they announced that his wife, my grandmother, had decided who would get the 240-acre farm. And there were six children, and so she had designated a 40-acre tract for each of them. And as a consequence, some of them got the best tracts of land, and some got the poorest. And so there was a lot of debate, discussion. I sat in the car, family car, on the square in Centerville on a hot July afternoon with the windows down, hearing my uncles and aunts arguing a block and a half away. Oh. The windows were open and you could hear very clearly. And as a consequence, that really had a negative impact on family relationships. And our family reunions halted and didn't return until 1963. So I vowed that hot July day that if I ever got to the point where I could, I wanted to do something about the planning process that would involve everyone. And that actually transpired. I went to Iowa State and I got a degree, and then in military for a couple of years. Then I worked for Wallace's Farmer for a year and had an opportunity to do some writing, and I was writing in this area as well, and went to Iowa City to talk to a professor there who had a very good name in terms of this subject matter area. So out of that came a belief that it's really important to have a discussion within the family on a regular basis. And so we have we've tried to do that. I've published one 15-volume set that has quite a bit in it dealing with this area, and Farm Income Tax Manual, a 2-volume set, and 29 books in total. It's been very rewarding. But one of the things that I keep telling people is you've really got to focus on discussions within the family. And I've been telling groups that for quite a long time. But it occurred to me, I was driving one day, you know, Harl, you've been telling people this, but have you done it yourself? And so I got very, very much involved with planning within the family. And a year ago, a little over a year ago, we had a 2-day seminar in Denver. And we had a little publication, Our Objective, A Seamless Transition. And we put together quite a bit of information about the farm that we've managed to acquire, and how it works. Our two sons, both MBAs from Harvard, but they really know very little about farming. But fortunately, we had an opportunity to discuss for 2 days what farming is really like and how they could move into that area, not abandoning their other careers, but to view this as an investment opportunity.
Well, and for farmers, for people with farms in the family, we're going to talk about, this isn't just, we're not just talking about estate planning for farmers, but when there's farmland involved, this becomes so complicated. Not just because of the value of the property, but because there will be people who are interested in the farm, or maybe there won't be people who are interested in the farm, and there's a lot of inequity that can result there. I mean, tell me about some of the challenges you've seen, because you have seen other families torn apart by this.
Well, it is certainly a challenging area, and fortunately, we do have attorneys and the CPAs and accountants and others who are bankers and others who are very much involved. But it takes some studying. It takes some time and effort, and what we did here with our objective, a seamless transition, is something that is a great need, and it needs to be updated periodically. So you can't just do something, make a will, and then put it on the shelf and forget about it. That would not be wise, because the law is changing. There are other changes that are important to consider. And so what is vital is to put together a team, usually with an attorney as the head of that team, and others who are involved with your operation. And keep raising questions, keep reading. There's a lot published, and you can get a lot of information out of farm magazines, for example. And so our belief is that the more discussion we have, the less the chance of a serious conflict within the family. Now, we're lucky because our two sons are both off-farm heirs. If you have a situation where there are some off-farm heirs and some on-farm heirs, then you add an additional set of issues that are going to be troubling in some instances, not all. But the off-farm heirs weren't really too involved until they began to see what was happening to land values. And when they pick up the newspaper and read where someone in far northwest Iowa sold their farm for more than $21,000 an acre, then they perk up their ears and start asking, well, how much is that on-farm heir of ours, our brother, sister, or both? How much are they going to get, and is that appropriate? And so that's where the conflict often begins. And so what we suggest, there are some options that I think have worked quite well. One option is a two-entity model. And that two-entity model means that one of the entities that you create has the machinery, the livestock, carrying on the farming operation. And that one usually we suggest be limited to those who are involved full-time or nearly so in the farming operation. But then there's another entity, and that other entity is open to all of the heirs. And that entity is renting the land to the production entity, which is the first one we mentioned. And this seems to work pretty well, because the off-farm heirs are really interested in value, in what's happening to land values in particular. They aren't really up to speed with respect to what's happening technically in agriculture, what problems in fertilizers and chemicals and so on. But they have what they think is important, a piece of the farmland.
Right. And some income that they can depend on.
Yes, that's
as
right.
As well.
So we've worked with a lot of these, and we discuss it when we're out in the real world. And I think it's something that merits inclusion in your thinking. Not that it's the way to go, but and there are problems with this. There's problems of disagreement. But
and every farm is different, and every family is different. So
yes, but you've minimized. I'm convinced you've minimized the serious problems, because that serious problem set is really comprised heavily of those who feel that they've been shut out. They left, went to college maybe, and to New York, and they are out of the picture, and they see their brother and sister back on the farm doing very well with land at $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 an acre.
Right.
So we think that's one way to go. But there are lots of possibilities. There are just lots of possibilities.
I'm talking with Neil Harrell, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State University, former director of the Center for International Agricultural Finance. With us also, Gordon Fisher, an estate planning lawyer, Gordon Fisher Law Firm. And we'd love to hear from you as well with your questions, your concerns, stories that you'd like to share of experiences you've had with your family. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Gordon, if you're not a farmer and you're not wealthy and you're not elderly, I mean, a lot of people don't think that estate planning applies to them. And that's where that figure comes from, that less than, or, you know, 50% of Americans don't have a will. Who needs to be thinking about this?
Absolutely everyone needs an estate plan. It doesn't matter age, wealth, status. All those things don't matter. Everyone needs some kind of estate plan. And that's really for three reasons. First, you give an opportunity – you'll have an opportunity through an estate plan to make sure that your assets at death go to who you want, when you want, and how you want. Also, through estate planning, you can give to your favorite charities. We heard that, your favorite nonprofits. We heard that during the first segment of our show.
Right.
And third, for those folks that have children under 18, minor children, you can name a guardian should something happen to you. So there are lots of benefits to estate planning, and it really applies to everyone, not just wealthy folks, not just farmers. It really is something that everyone needs to take a really careful look at.
Well, and we were just listening to Neil Harrell's story of his two-day seminar. Not everybody's going to have the wherewithal or the buy-in or the need for a two-day family seminar to talk about what's going to happen. But how do you get started with this process?
Yeah, it's, you know, getting started, as with any project, getting started is kind of the hardest part. But once you can get started and get a little momentum going, that's great. I myself on my website have an estate planning questionnaire. I think that's an excellent first step. Lots of lawyers have estate planning questionnaires or worksheets on their website. So you can Google that, find a questionnaire or worksheet that you like, and start to fill it out. And I think that will really help kind of gel your thinking about what you want your estate plan to accomplish.
Now, we were talking earlier about the importance of having a conversation with your family. I mean, clearly, if these are your assets. This is something that you've put together in your lifetime, whether it's a small estate or a large estate. Do you recommend to people that they bring the family into the conversation?
I do recommend you bring the family into the conversation. Absolutely. As Neil said, you don't want to just have an estate plan and put it on a shelf somewhere and have it gather dust. You need to keep it updated. You need to have the family brought in and be discussing it. But, you know, I'm really concerned about the statistic you cited at the outset, that so many people don't even have a basic will. And actually, there are several documents that should be part of everyone's estate plan.
And what are those?
So first, you should have a will. But a will is not the same as an estate plan. A will is just one document in an estate plan. You should also have a power of attorney for financial matters in case you suffer a disability, and you're unable to make financial decisions for yourself. A medical power of attorney, same thing. You become disabled, can't make medical decisions for yourself. In addition to that, you may want to have something that talks about the disposition of your final remains, whether you want to be buried, cremated. And finally, you know, there are certain items that we all have that are maybe not of monetary value, but of high sentimental value. Wedding rings, for example, you could have a form that sort of separates out those sentimental items to, if you want those to go to certain individuals.
All right.
So those, I think, are sort of the five or six basic documents that should be part of everyone's estate plan, and then you can build on it from there.
We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the importance and the power of estate planning. If you have questions, feel free to give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Neil Harl, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State University and the former director of the Center for International Agricultural Finance. Gordon Fisher is here, an estate planner and a lawyer. And if you've had these conversations in your family, how has it gone? What do you feel the value was of those conversations? Or did you have a conversation with family that did not go well about estate planning? Give us a call. Call us with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about estate planning, and not just for large estates, estates large and small. With me is Neil Harl, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State University, former director of the Center for International Agricultural Finance. Also with me, Gordon Fisher. He's an estate planner and a lawyer, Gordon Fisher Law Firm in Iowa City. And we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to ask you, Gordon, if you don't have a will, if you haven't planned your estate and you pass away, what happens? I think a lot of us just think, well, everything will go to my spouse and things will be okay.
Interesting. Now, there are some there can be some real negative consequences. First, you're far more likely to pay more in attorney costs, fees, taxes, than you would if you had done proper estate planning. So your estate will probably get kind of chomped up by costs and fees more so than if you had done proper estate planning. For folks that are married, yes, it's true that most of the stuff goes to the spouse, but you know, not necessarily. It really depends on the situation. And keep in mind, there's a lot of folks out there that aren't married. So for them, it's critically important that they have an estate plan in place. For those folks that are married, I know I mentioned this earlier, but for those folks that are married that have minor children, you really want to make sure that your estate plan names a guardian in case something should happen to the parents. Another thing that's not particularly pleasant to think about, but it does happen, is something happening to both you and your spouse, so a common accident, a common disaster. So an estate plan is necessary for those reasons. So that's why I say everyone really does need an estate plan.
We have a question from Dave in Cedar Falls. He says, please talk about the need for a trust as part of an estate plan. And I think first you're going to have to define trust for us.
Okay, well, it's a great question. So earlier I talked about five or six kind of basic estate planning documents. And for some folks, they need more than that. They will also need a trust. And I like to explain a trust as sort of a big imaginary container into which you place your assets. And a trust has a bunch of benefits. You avoid probate. So you avoid probate fees. It's much quicker than probate. It's confidential. You can name a trustee or trustees that can invest the money or the assets so that it maybe can continue on if there's, like, say, a charitable fund you want to start. So a trust does have a really large number of benefits.
And this is a way to exercise some control?
You can definitely exercise more control. Well, let me back up.
Yeah.
First, you can exercise no control without an estate plan. With a basic estate plan, you have some control. With a trust, you even have more control. But, you know, it's almost trying to define a trust here. It's almost like if I went up to the horticulture gang and said, you know, what is a plant? Right? What is a tree? There are so many different kinds of trusts. But the basic idea, again, is there's this imaginary container. You're putting your assets and protecting your assets in this trust, saving money, saving time, and having, indeed, more control.
We have another question about trusts here. Mark is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
If you form a trust and have it and have the trustee, what are just skim over the top, what are the responsibilities and the duties of a trustee?
So the responsibilities and duties of a trustee, well, first of all, there's some very basic duties and responsibilities set out in the Iowa Probate Code by law. Additionally, in the trust document itself, you, the creator of the trust, can set out other duties and responsibilities. But the very basic ones are a duty of loyalty to the trust, a duty to make prudent investment decisions for the trust, a duty to protect the trust from creditors. So those are sort of – it's sort of fiduciary duties, much like, say, a banker would have a fiduciary duty to customers or clients, credit union, same thing, a lawyer and client, basically a duty to protect that trust.
Does that answer your question, Mark?
Yes, that does. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call. So that's a responsibility that you also want to make sure whoever you're asking to be the trustee knows that that is a stipulation of your will as well, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So you definitely want to pick someone that you trust, no pun intended, to the nth degree. So if you pick a trustee or an executor for your will, you really want to have a high, high degree of confidence in this person. And you should talk to that person before you make them trustee or before you make them executor of your will. That is definitely a conversation, as Neil said, you need to have.
And Neil, I want to ask you, you've spent so many years studying this and you see how an inheritance can impact a family, can impact the heirs. I mean, what should we know about that? Because it really can be a powerful impact, and it's one that affects all of our society in many ways.
Yes, there are a number of issues here. I was just sitting here thinking about some of those. One issue is there is some concern about federal estate tax as one of the broad issues. But Congress has been fairly generous and has raised the exemption amount so that a husband and wife together can have more than $10 million in assets without paying any federal estate tax. And if they've made charitable gifts, as was mentioned earlier, that, of course, is a deductible item, whether it's your church or foundation or whatever it might be. So that's one of the current issues that people are concerned about. I get calls, I get cards and letters saying, should we support repeal of the federal estate tax? And my argument is, well, the great bulk of farm people probably will not have to worry about federal estate tax. And several years ago, Iowa made some changes in the inheritance tax as well. So actually, the taxes that you face at death are important, but usually not terribly critical in terms of diminishing what is going to go on to your children and others after your death. So those are the issues. On the will side, I just recently had occasion to work with a couple, and one of their problems was that they had a very old will and had not been updated. It had not been changed in probably 30, 35 years. And it's important that you make changes, not only because there may be changes in tax law and other law, but there's also the matter of the fact that you may not agree with some of the things that you had placed in the will 30, 40 years ago. So it's important to keep it current, and every 5-6 years or so, have it reviewed with your lawyer, and that will help you to again update your own thinking relative to whether it's continuing to do what you want it to do.
And we've talked about the importance of having these family conversations. Do you have advice for families about how to start those conversations? Because it's a difficult conversation to have. We have to face up to the fact that the people we love aren't going to be there forever, and we need to make plans. That's hard for a lot of people. So how do you start that?
I think there is certainly something here that relates in part, I think, to age. Over the years, and my memory goes back to the 30s, in many cases, the parents simply don't want to share a lot of information. There are lots of reasons for that. But so they often are reluctant to even share with the children. They also may have in the back of their mind what they want to do with the property. And they may think, look, that's going to make some of my children unhappy. And so they don't want to have a fight with their own family, so they just clam up. And so there are lots of reasons for continuing to be familiar with what is in your documentation and whether you agree with it now. But I really would urge everyone who is hearing us today to give serious thought to the benefits that you gain from learning what the children think and what your spouse thinks. I've run into situations where the spouse didn't know, and it was quite a shock after the death of the husband. So it's being a good citizen to share these feelings and ideas and thoughts, and they may have something to offer that you hadn't thought about.
So even if it's hard, Gordon, you have some advice to add?
Well, yeah, I just want to say it is hard to sit down with a family and talk about death, people not being here. But Charity, do you know what's even harder is something happening. And we're all going to die. It's just a question of when. Something terrible happening and then having a conversation, and the conversation consisting of what now. We don't have instructions of what to do. We don't know what to do. We don't know how the assets should be distributed or what kind of funeral service this person wants. All those kinds of questions. That's a much, much, much more difficult, heart-wrenching discussion to have.
Well, and Ross mentions on Facebook, he says, you're never too young to have the right documentation in place. We needed to use our durable financial and medical powers of attorney at age 39. Thank God we had them. Here's a question from Jim in Ames, and I do think this is something that stands in the way for a lot of people. He says, we're actively setting up everything mentioned today. The stopping point has been trying to find a way of caring for our cats in the event of our deaths. Do you have any suggestions about that, Gordon?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, it's one I get all the time. People have fur babies, right? And they really want those fur babies taken care of. You can set up a pet trust. So you can, an additional document would be a pet trust, set some money aside, set somebody, name somebody, nominate somebody who will take care of your fur baby. And leave instructions for how to take care of your fur baby. So there is such a thing as a pet trust, and that can be set up.
All right. So it's been done before. You can do it, too.
It's actually codified. There is an Iowa law that you can set up a pet trust, and it's something that's done fairly regularly.
Mark is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
What's your question, quickly?
My question is, when a spouse dies, if the spouse has a will, does marital survivorship precede the will, or does the will precede marital survivorship?
Oh, that's a great question. So if your spouse has a will, do you have to abide by that will?
Charity, you cannot disinherit your spouse. So in Iowa, if you're legally married at the time of your spouse's death, that spouse is going to get a chunk of your estate no matter what the will says, even if the spouse who died tries to write you out completely.
Oh, wow. So, Mark, does that answer your question, or is there more to it?
No, that was it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And we are nearly out of time, but we had a question from Julie, and she says, I've put off doing will because I don't know the questions to ask. I feel weird that I have a house, minimal assets, and I don't want to pay $500 to have a will drawn up. So for people who feel like they have minimal assets, they don't want to lay out cash right now to get somebody to help them with this. What's your response to that, Gordon?
Well, I think $500 for the benefits that we've been talking about throughout this hour, both me and Professor Harrell, is actually quite a bargain. So I would definitely take that $500, spend it, and get some peace of mind. Make sure that your house and your other assets go to the people that you want. Make sure that you have a guardian named in case you have minor children. Make sure that the nonprofits you care about receive proceeds from your estate. I honestly think $500 is a bargain when you consider the benefits that accrue from an estate plan.
Well, and are people often, part of this planning process for a lot of people is setting aside the funds for funeral services, for a resting place, for a grave, if that's what you want. Are people often really shocked by the cost of that?
They are really shocked by the cost of that, and that's something they should definitely explore, a prepaid funeral plan. And again, a document I mentioned earlier, disposition of final remains, you can kind of codify that in that document, the exact steps that you've taken in terms of your funeral.
Gordon Fisher, thank you so much for your time today.
Charity, thank you. It was just a thrill to be on.
Gordon Fisher of Gordon Fisher Law Firm. He's an estate planner and a lawyer. And Neil Harrell, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And you've been telling people for many decades to make a plan. So we'll take that as your takeaway message today as well. Neil Harrell, Emeritus Professor of Economics at Iowa State University, former Director of the Center for International Agricultural Finance. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Stanton. You can get in touch with us anytime. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can follow us on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter as well at IPR Talk. I'm there too, @CharityNebby. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.